why, but I know that I've got a lot of great relationships in this room, some that are deep and have been deep for a long time, and I think that's a big part of it. Where there's something special about when you walk into a room with family where there's just this sense of like, ah. And I get that amongst you people. So I'm thankful for that. Let me pray before I dive in. Jesus, thank you that more than we get with any other relationship, you are our safe place. That you are the one that we can come to and get that that peace, that rest, that strength, that care that we need. And we are just so glad to be a part of your family. The riches of that we don't understand, but we're thankful. Speak through me this morning and deliver the words that are needed. In Jesus' name, amen. So we are going to talk about community. This is something that I love. It's one of my favorite topics in the world, actually. And first, let me back up about 7 years to give you a bit of a context of where a lot of this is coming from. About 7 years ago, my wife and I were living in Prince George, and I was working at Westwood Church, and we were praying about the future, and we felt like the Lord said, it's time to go overseas. And that wasn't a real shock to us. We knew ever since before we got married that that was going to happen at some point, that there was an overseas component to our lives. But we didn't know when or where, and so this moment came, and we were like, okay, it's time. And we still didn't know where, so we drove down to Vancouver, and we went to Missions Fest. Have any of you been to Missions Fest? It's like a huge conference that happens every year in Vancouver. I think there's also one in Edmonton. But it's where a ton of missions organizations from all over the world gather together and share stories of what God's doing, share about their ministries, and invite people to participate, either to go as missionaries or to support missions, all kinds of different things. And so we thought, great opportunity for us to go and see what's out there and see if Jesus highlights something to us as we walk around and talk to people. So we did this trip down there, and my wife and I had this idea in our minds that we were going to Latin America because we'd both taken Spanish in university, and that just makes sense. And so we're at this missions conference, we're walking through all these Latin American booths, and everything we looked at, it was like, great, I'm glad somebody's doing that, but that's not for us, over and over and over again. And we ended up, we hit lunchtime, and we're like, we need to go get some food. But we'd been told by friends of ours that they had friends that we should meet that were also at this conference. And so we thought, okay, on our way to lunch, we'll swing by their booth and say hi to them and then go on. And we ended up actually doing lunch with this family, and we sat down, and to cram it into a bite-sized story, by the end of lunch, we were convinced that we should move to China. And it's like, whoa, how did that happen? And there's lots of pieces to it, and I won't share all of them. But one of the things that really grabbed me during that lunch conversation that I'll never forget was we went into it with this idea that we knew they were in China. And so we even said on our way to lunch, okay, we got to tell them right away, we're going to Latin America, we're already studying Spanish, so they don't try and recruit us. And we sat down and we're like, we're going to Latin America and we're just interested to connect with you because we know you're doing life overseas with young kids and we're just starting our family. And so we want to get some wisdom from you about life overseas and how does it work and whatever. And so we had this kind of a conversation. But about partway through, they started talking about this community that they were a part of in Chengdu, China. And There was lots of things that they said that I loved, but one of the one phrase that really grabbed me was this guy, Garrett. He said, I asked him, I'm like, what do you love about this community that you're a part of? And he thought about it for a minute. He said, they're people I would die for. And when he said that, I was like, I want in. I want to be a part of that. My whole life, I feel like I've been longing for that, to be a part of a group of people where we could say, and actually mean it, those are people I would die for. And there was other stuff that convinced us that this wasn't just an emotional thing, that Jesus was really saying go, but there was something about him saying that that just really got its hooks into me. And I was like, I got to be a part of this. So we moved to China, and over the last 6 years, we went through a bit of a wild roller coaster ride of all kinds of stuff. But I would say, looking back now, one of the most significant pieces of the time that we spent in China was what we learned about community. And I'm not going to paint it all rosy. It was not an easy 6 years. Even in community, we had some hard conversations, some really hard relationships, and ups and downs. But looking back now, I would say it was a gift. All of it. And I'll give some specific examples as we go on, but I had to learn how community works in the kingdom, because it's different from the way community works outside of the kingdom. So, we often talk about things like community and family. These are common topics these days. And I think part of it is because a lot of us are really hungry for it. And so we talk about it, but I think there's a lot of different ideas about what does that mean, what does it look like. And I think of like a family takes a trip to Disneyland, and they come back and they go, their friends ask them, how was Disneyland? And you could get a response like, I was horrible. I hated it. And I was sick the whole time, and I threw up on the rides, and it poured rain, and blah, 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 and it, like all these things that go on and on. And it's like, oh, wow, that's sad. And if that's all you heard about Disneyland, then you'd be like, I am never going to Disneyland. Why would people pay money for that? But we know, because we've all heard more than that kind of a story, that that's not Disneyland. That's not what Disneyland is. That's not how it's meant to be experienced. And this is Disneyland. This is what Disneyland is meant to be. This kind of an experience, the wonder, the excitement, the blue sky, sunshine, lots of fun, nobody sick, eating candy. Like this is what Disneyland was designed to be, how it was meant to be experienced. And the same thing with community. We can have all kinds of conversations about family and community and how we've experienced it and what we want it to be and those kinds of things. But I think if we in the kingdom are going to talk about community, we've got to go back to asking the question, what is the design? How is community designed to be? It's not about our experience. We don't build on our experience. We build on the design of what God's intended. So I'm going to read the first verse is Ephesians 1, verse 5. I'm going to have us all over the place this morning reading all kinds of different stuff. But this says, God predestined us for adoption as sons through Jesus Christ, according to the purpose of his will. And this is really where it all begins, is when we talk about community in the context of the kingdom, community is actually not good enough. It's not the right word. Because what we're talking about actually is family. When you go through Scripture, okay, let's flip to Romans. Actually, we won't flip there. But in Romans, it talks about how if we confess I'm getting my verses crossed. What's the words? You're going to know it when I say it. Anyway, he says we get the right to become children of God. There's this adoption. We become sons and daughters of the King. And you can go all throughout the New Testament. The language is family. God is our Father. We're brothers and sisters. We're sons and daughters. The context of community, when we talk about it in the church, it's all the context of family. The relationship is family. It's family words or body words. The two ways that community is talked about in the New Testament is primarily in these two images. One is family. What does family look like? And one is being a body together. And I think that often we miss that. We launch into our conversations about how to do community, and I read this blog, and I read this, and okay, but I think differently. And we don't get back enough to asking the question, what's the design that God has given us for how community should operate in the church? So how does family operate? And I'm not talking about how have we experienced it. What was it like for you growing up? How does your family do things? I'm talking about how is it supposed to be? So what I want you to do is actually in threes or fours, right where you are, take 2 minutes, and I want you to answer that question together. Share your ideas. So you might need to turn around, depending on where you're sitting, shift over a couple seats. But with a couple people right around you, answer the question together. Just share your ideas. What is family supposed to be like? What are the keys? What are the key markers of family, the way that it's supposed to be, the way that God designed it? So take 2 minutes, share your ideas with each other, and then I'm going to pull some out. Okay, so I'd like to get a few ideas from you guys. What were some of the things that you came up with? What are the key elements of how family should work? Supportive. Great. What else? Unconditional love. Yes. Accountability. Somebody said trust. Safety. Quality time, or spending time together, quantity and quality time. Forgiveness. Communication. That is a key element, absolutely. At the back. You're stuck together. Okay, I want to stop there. Because there's all kinds of stuff. about how family operates together. Communication, love and forgiveness, and these are some of the how-tos, the things that we do. But, okay, if we're going right down to bedrock, family, community, bedrock, I think that's it. So, actually, I'm not going to read it, but let's just think for a moment about the story of the prodigal son. So there's this story, and it's these two brothers, and one of them takes his inheritance, bad news, he runs away, he does a bunch of horrible stuff, and he comes back, and the father's posture towards him is acceptance. The bond was not broken by the fact that he ran away, squandered his inheritance, did all of these things that he shouldn't have done, that in our modern context would have broken relationship and community. It didn't. It didn't for the father and son. And for me, this is so true in my life. I'll give you an example of my wife and I. We started dating back in, I shouldn't have started that sentence. Forever ago. And we dated for about 3 years, give or take. And our dating relationship was horrible. And she'll say the same thing. It was like we were so stressed and communicated poorly and ups and downs of emotions, all kinds of things. And we had lots of reasons to doubt if we were a good match along the way because of all of the upheaval and whatever that went on. But we knew that Jesus, well, I think I knew more than she did. She was still questioning on the day that I proposed. But I was convinced this is the right girl. And so I pressed on. I knew that Jesus was saying yes. And so we got engaged and we got married. And something happened when we got married. It was like this switch flipped. And our relationship went from like, we think this is right, but it's not a thrill, to incredible 2 or 3 months later. And about 3 months after we got married, the one morning I was sitting in our apartment and I was thinking about, wow, I just love this. I just love being married. And I began asking, what shifted? What changed? And I realized that what had happened was when she said yes at the altar, I knew this is forever. And no matter what I do or what I say or whatever, she's not going anywhere. And all of the guards and the barriers and everything in my life came down. And I could finally actually joke with her. I was so concerned about my image up until our marriage that I was not very fun or funny. I'm actually a really funny guy. I am. But I hadn't allowed myself to be fun or funny with her in our dating relationship because I was so concerned about keeping up appearances to make sure that I got her. But when she said yes and the deal was done, that fear over about 2 months afterwards just slipped away. And I could finally be myself with her. And you know what? She liked the me that was hiding more than the me that had been showing, which is why marriage turned out so great. Because when we could be real with each other, the depth that we had together was so much greater, and we could enjoy each other so much more. And I think that this is the intention for God with us, not just in marriage, but in community life. And the foundational piece of family, like you said, is this stuck togetherness. We're in the family, and like my brother, he can move to Timbuktu, he's still my brother. Nothing's changing that. And that's God's intention for us in our relationships together, is this stuck togetherness of family. In 2 Timothy 2, verse 13, it says, if we are faithless, he remains faithful. This is that family stuck togetherness. Because we've got a choice. In family, one person can, like the prodigal son, can take a bunch of the money and blow it on stuff and actually dishonor the whole family, and it could be really costly, genuinely costly, one person's actions for the rest of the family. But God was faithful even when the son was faithless. And so when he came back, relationship was right there. And we get to choose whether we operate that way or not. Because, again, our culture, the norm for right now, is not to be that way. Our culture really likes the eye for an eye. Let's go back to that. You burn me, I'm going to burn you. Worse, usually, is how it goes. And families are disintegrating because of that kind of mentality. But healing happens when we remain faithful, even when others are faithless. It's this commitment to connection, commitment to interconnection, to relationship with each other. It's being stuck together. And I think often when I've thought about being adopted into the family of God, I've thought about it kind of like this ball. Jesus is the ball, and we are the little blips, the points on the outside. It's like when we get adopted in, we get stuck to Jesus. But it's very individualistic. I'm my own point that's stuck in my spot, and I just happen to be next to you who are also stuck to Jesus. But that's not the kingdom. The kingdom is, it's not a ball, it's a body. Jesus is the head, and we're all connected to the head, but we're also all connected to each other. I'm going to flip to Ephesians 4. Let's start at verse, I could read this whole chapter. Let's start at verse 4, or right at verse 1 of chapter 4. I therefore, a prisoner for the Lord, urge you to walk in a manner worthy of the calling to which you've been called, with all humility and gentleness, with patience, bearing with one another in love, eager to maintain the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. Another translation says, binding yourselves together in peace. There is one body and one Spirit, just as you were all called to one hope, to the one hope that belongs to your call. One Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all, who is over all and through all and in all. Lots of alls. But grace was given to each of us according to the measure of Christ's gift. Therefore it says, when he ascended on high, he led a host of captives, and he gave gifts to men. Let me skip down to verse 11. He gave apostles and prophets and evangelists and shepherds and teachers to equip the saints for the work of ministry, for building up the body of Christ, until we all attain to the unity of faith and of the knowledge of the Son of God, to mature manhood, to the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ. So this is talking about community. Unified together, growing to maturity into the fullness of Christ. So that we may no longer be children tossed to and fro by the waves and carried about by every wind of doctrine, by human cunning, by craftiness and deceitful schemes. Rather, speaking the truth in love, we are to grow up in every way into him who is the head, into Christ, from whom the whole body, joined and held together by every joint with which it is equipped, when each part is working properly, makes the body grow so that it builds itself up in love. You see how deeply interconnected that whole imagery is? It's this tight, joined together, working together, stuck together kind of body. It's not like the ball. It really, and I love that this picture uses gears. It's this working together, partnership, moving together. That's the desire when it comes to community. And there's all kinds of other things that come into it. Because being stuck together isn't enough. We've also got to, as it said in here, speak the truth in love. We're not just committed to all showing up and being in the same room together. We actually need the truth of Jesus. We need to operate in a context where we know each other. We share our struggles. We can pray for each other. We can give words of correction when it's needed. All of those things. But without this commitment to being stuck together, the rest of it falls apart. I'll give you an example. One of my sisters, this is years ago, went through a really rough season of life. And bad decisions were made, and I, as her older brother, felt really concerned. Because I had a genuine love for my sister. Loved her, and I wanted the best for her life. But I began to operate out of fear in our relationship. And I went to her, and I began to address some of the things that I was seeing. But because it was out of fear, the communication wasn't healthy. And I ended up driving our relationship apart. It was really costly. And I didn't know better. I didn't even realize what I was doing at the time. But we ended up with this really distant relationship. We'd grown up, and through our teenage years, we could share basically anything. We were like best friends. And she knew what was going on in my head, and I knew what was going on in hers, and we were close. But when she began making decisions that I disagreed with and I responded in fear, I pushed her away. And we basically walked away from each other. And I think it's, when I reflect back on it now, I try and imagine, okay, like how did she experience that situation? How did she experience the conversations that we had? And one of the things that strikes me is I think that she didn't feel like I was on her side. I think she felt like she was the enemy. And when that happens, this stuck togetherness is gone. Because what she hears, even if I don't say it verbally, the way that I relate to her says, you are a gear that is somehow outside of the body, and I'm relating to you as this distant thing. And so then that was how our relationship became defined. You're over there and I'm here. And we didn't hardly talk for probably four years or so. And I won't share the whole journey of everything that's happened, but our relationship is in a totally different place now. And actually, just recently, we had a confrontational conversation that went fantastically. There was an issue that I saw in her, and we sat down and we had a conversation, and we got to the end of it, and she was overjoyed at my presence in her life in relation to that thing. Because what she received from me as we communicated was, I am on your side. I am so interested in you, in how you're experiencing this, in how you're feeling, and in your best future. And she was able to receive really hard words that even brought her to tears in the conversation because she knew I was fighting for her, not against her. And that is what it looks like when the body is operating properly. There's this stuck togetherness that says, I love you, I am for you. And even if it costs me greatly, I'm still in. And I think that's the foundation of community. When we get that commitment, then we can build something. It's the same thing with marriage. You can work on communication, and you can work on lifestyle patterns, and go to parenting conferences, and all these kinds of things. But if you don't have that base level confidence that we are stuck together, we are committed to one another, we're not going anywhere, and we love each other, we're fighting for each other, the rest of it is going to fail. The foundation is relationship. It's this commitment to stuck togetherness. It's a recognition of this is our reality. Because it is. Even if we don't feel like it, even if we don't want it, this is our reality. If we're in the kingdom, we're stuck together. From a heavenly perspective, we are gears that are intermeshed. And we don't have to operate like that. And I think far too often we get a body like this, and the way that we operate is if a butcher's come and hacked us to pieces and spread us across the yard. And I do my thing, and you do your thing. And we end up lonely, ineffective, and not an example at all to the world. But, Jesus is inviting us into this experience of family that's transformative for everything. Because the reality is, when you know that people are on your side, they're fighting for you, like the prodigal son, his father, his ability to move forward would be incredible. If that son had come home and the father said, wow, I am so angry, I am so disappointed in you, you have shamed our family, it's going to take you 100 years to earn my forgiveness, what do you think his future would look like? Even if the father said, okay, come, we'll start you at the bottom. Let's see if we can do something with that. We'll trial run. What do you think the future of that son would have looked like? What do you think the relationships in the family would have looked like? But when the father says, welcome home, I've been waiting for you every day. Here's a ring, here's a robe, let's throw a feast. What's the potential of that son to move forward? And the same goes in the context of community. When we can operate as a body where we know we are on each other's side. We've got each other's back. We're going to fight for each other. And if you blow it, I'm there. I'm ready. Let me in. Man, my ability to take risks and to dream big and to try things is exponentially greater. And that was the experience that my wife and I got in this small community of missionaries in Chengdu. We joined this group of people and we were welcomed in right away. And we had people that were fighting for us. When we would share something that was hard, people weren't just like, yeah, I'll pray for you. They were like, let me in. How can I get involved? Can I go with you to that meeting? Can I help you with that conversation? And when I made mistakes, about 6 months into our time in China, I found out that one of my mentor, his wife had committed suicide. And it wrecked me. And for about a month, I didn't want anything to do with prayer. I didn't want anything to do with church. I didn't want anything to do with anything. And these guys from that group, they showed up over and over again. They took me out for coffee and they just loved on me. And they didn't say, wow, you're a bad Christian. Boy, this doubt that you've got, man, you're blowing it. They came and they sat with me and they processed and they asked the questions, what's going on? What are you thinking? Is that true? Because I was believing lies. But they were there and they were with me. And I think that's the invitation. And I know in this group, there's a hunger for more. More community, deeper community. I've heard from numerous people since we got back to Canada this summer, and I've asked people, what do you see are the greatest needs in Prince George right now? I keep hearing loneliness. Loneliness. And this is talking about the church. It's not talking about Greater Prince George. It's talking about the church. Loneliness is one of the greatest issues in the church in our city. And we could get discouraged about that. We could get beat down about that. Man, we're doing a bad job. Ooh. Or we could say, okay, let me in. Let's build community. Let's start with a foundation where we say, I'm committed. I'm going to walk with you. I love you, even if it costs me. We had a friend this last year who was really costly. We'd known each other for a while, and he made some bad choices. And there were lots of days where I wanted to walk away from that relationship. And every time I would sit down to pray for him, I would just think, okay, what would Jesus do? And I would always picture Jesus walking over to him and sitting down and saying, I'm in. I'm here. And I remember one specific conversation that broke something in our relationship and allowed things to start moving forward. It was a horrible day. He made some really bad decisions, and I was angry at him and frustrated because I didn't know what to do, and I just wanted to not have anything to do with it anymore. And my wife and I sat down and prayed, and I just knew Jesus would be there sitting beside him. And I was like, okay, okay. And so I went and found him, and I sat down beside him, and he didn't even want to look at me because he was angry too, and he was ashamed, and he was trying to push me out of his life because he was ashamed, I think. And I sat down with him, and I was like sitting there, and I'm like, Jesus, I don't even know what to say. Why am I here? And he just said, tell them you don't know what to say. And I just turned to him. I said, you know what? I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do. but I'm not going anywhere. I'm staying here with you because we're family. And from that day, things began to shift in our relationship. And I think so many of us are so afraid of rejection, we reject first so that we won't be rejected. We push people away because we know we've got issues and we're afraid of being found out. Another story, I was in university, my first year of university at Trinity Western, and my English professor shared this story in class one day. She had just adopted a little girl from China, and she was about 3 years old. And she said, she was telling us in class one day, she said, last night my daughter had an absolute meltdown. I was putting her to bed, and she suddenly, out of the blue, exploded at me and was saying the most horrific things, just, I hate you. I never want to see you again. You are not my mommy. I hate you. Get away from me. And just on and on, just this tirade of emotions and stuff. And she said, thank goodness that somebody had prepped me in advance, warned me that this might happen, and gave me wisdom about what to do. And she said, so what I did is I sat down on the bed next to my daughter. I let her scream. And when she finally stopped to take a breath, I said, you know what? That's okay. But I love you. And I'm not going anywhere. And the girl just, it just ended. Because she'd launched into this thing because she was afraid of being rejected. She was trying to reject first to keep a wall of protection around herself. And we do the same thing in all kinds of different ways in the context of church. We're hungry for community. We want these kinds of relationships like the prodigal son and his father. But we're afraid. We're afraid, and so we don't go there. And so I want to invite you this morning to make a choice to be in. And so I want you to think right now, we're just going to silence for about 1 or 2 minutes, and I want you to think about your relationships in your life right now, the people that Jesus has given you in this room, and I'm sure some outside of this room. And I want you to think about the relationships that God's given you and ask yourself, am I in? Am I actually in? Am I committed? Stuck together with those people? And am I living it out? So take a minute and think about that. we are a body. Whether we feel like it or not, whether we want it or not, we are a body. And we have the opportunity to say yes to living this way. And you know what? It's costly. It's costly. But when we do it, the life that comes is incredible. It unleashes potential in us like we've never seen. And Jesus is so interested in us and the best future possible for us as individuals and as a church that he invites us to pay the cost, just like he did. In 1 John 3:16, it says, "By this we know love, that he laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for our brothers." That's the invitation for us. Let me pray. Jesus, we're hungry for close connection with you and with each other. And sometimes that's really hard. And so I ask you that you would stir up a hunger in us for that, so that like Jesus, we would be able to say, "For the joy set before me, I will endure the cost." Give us a vision for the kind of relationships, the kind of body that you desire for us to experience. And give us hope and wisdom to take the steps that are necessary to move towards that intention that you have for us. Practical steps, even this week. Help us with the conversations we need to have, the wounds we need to mend, the apologies we need to make. Show us how to communicate love.